Welcome, y'all, to the Direct Examination Podcast. I'm Amber Fulmer.
I'm Dane Phillips.
And I'm Joseph Bias. Hey, guys. How are y'all?
Alive.
Here we are. Another episode.
We thank
everyone. Quarantine.
Yeah,
in quarantine. Yeah, I know. Are we week 7 or 8 or I don't know.
Well, if we're going from the stay-at-home order, South Carolina issued that April 7th, and then we just lifted it. But courts were closed for us starting March 17th, I believe, wasn't that the day? I sent out pleadings for filing on the 16th. I remember I had to make a phone call on the 17th, like, guess who is not getting divorced in the very near future? You.
Well, regardless of how long, I know I've been working from home a little bit longer. Regardless how long you all have been working from home, we hope that you're safe and happy and doing as well as possible. We are obviously very fortunate to have you as our listeners, and we're fortunate to have our guest today. Amber, tell us about her.
All right. Our guest today is Susan Williams. She's a native South Carolinian and grew up on a farm in rural South Carolina. Susan attended the University of South Carolina, and after her freshman year, an event happened that would change the trajectory of her life from that point forward. Susan was carjacked at gunpoint on the University of South Carolina campus. She began attending the court hearings as a victim and quickly became drawn to the criminal courts. She decided she wanted to be a prosecutor and ultimately graduated from USC School of Law. And as a law clerk for Jim Anders, he advised Susan that she needed to get some real trial experience. She took his advice and spent 4 years as a Dorchester County prosecutor and founded the law office of Susan E. Williams in 2008. Her private practice is focused on criminal defense. Susan is the president of the Dorchester County Bar Association and the chief municipal judge for the town of Edisto Beach. Welcome to the show, Susan. We're excited to have you on the podcast to discuss your version of the lean law firms and your experience. So, in other words, I think you're going to talk to us about how to operate a law firm on a budget, which I think is incredibly important, especially in these times, which are quite unprecedented for us. As far as everything that COVID-19 has done to affect everyone else's job, the economy, and it's having a ripple effect on the legal profession as well. So welcome.
Yes, Amber. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you, Susan. It's great to have you on. I know we discussed, it was probably over a year or so ago, and when we floated this idea around. So I'm just glad, and obviously the timing of it couldn't be better. I think this is going to be some critical information for solo and small firms and young lawyers who are about to hang a shingle. And if you heard that noise, was that you, Joseph, or your dog?
That was my dog that I ran and expelled from the upstairs area in my house. So I apologize for that.
He wants to be on the pod too.
Yeah.
It's a she. Her name's
Lily.
Excuse me. Thank you, Amber. Yeah, she tries to be the star of the show. So, Susan, let's walk back a little bit. Tell us about why you wanted to open your own law firm. You know, obviously that's a big decision that, you know, a lawyer makes. What drew you to opening up your own solo practice?
So I was 4 years with experience, trial experience, and you know, a lot of criminal law experience with the solicitor's office. And I started looking around job at private law firms, and I just was not getting offered the salary that I thought I deserved. And so I really started my law firm out as something, it was sort of meant to be something temporary, but it really caught on, thankfully, and it just took off. I knew from my steady paychecks that I had coming from the solicitor's office exactly, and I mean literally down to the penny, how much I needed each month to survive. Figured that, hey, if I can make that amount, anything after that will be a profit for me. I started off sort of something temporary, but it took off. You know, I've probably been the majority of lawyers saying this, but I probably had not really enough even to get, you know, my LLC formed. I mean, I had not a lot of extra income at all. I was living on a shoestring. I grew up living on a shoestring. Some people say it's frugal. Some people say it's cheap. But I am someone who loves to save money.
I'm with you.
I get it. I was raised by two public school teachers. I know that.
Well, and so going into that, now, you know, you've made that choice. You wanted to open up your own law firm. Tell us about how you opened up your own law firm. You started to sit there. You made the plan, right? That's the first step. You've made that, you know, you've made that decision. you're going to, you know, take the leap of faith, hang a shingle. So could you talk about how you plan to open your law firm? Because that's critical. Instead of just, you know, kind of going Geronimo, I know there was a plan involved.
Yes. And so I always had some kind of what I call a side hustle, you know, and it's really a legitimate thing, but some kind of steady or base income. And for me, it was being a guardian ad litem for family court cases. I was also a guardian ad litem in probate cases. And, you know, these are people with the private actions and they need a private attorney to come in and do lawyer work. So that was my part-time side gig. Some other ideas for folks could be like a contract attorney. I've also done document review for Nex and Pruitt, and you know, these larger firms have that to offer. You could also do something like being a part-time public defender or judge or prosecutor, and that will give you the same kind of monthly paycheck. And then in addition to your side hustle is up to you.
The good thing about those jobs is, like you said, they can provide kind of a steady income while you're building your client base, right? Is that kind of the point?
That's right. I think the key to running a law firm on a shoestring budget is minimizing your overhead expenses. I mean, it sounds so simple, but it takes a lot of discipline to do that and keep up with it. You know, keep doing what you're doing. Keep the overhead down.
I have a question, Susan. As when you go out on your own, you have the, you know, what's kind of making your monthly expenses, like you said, that income that you can count on each month with the guardian ad litem stuff. But you went from being a solicitor to doing criminal defense by yourself. Right. How did you advertise and get your name out there and build your base while keeping, you know, that tight budget? You know, how did you get your name out and attract those clients through advertising, since it's just you as a solo practitioner starting a firm?
So that's a great question. I had no money to advertise. You know, we're talking about chicken noodle soup, canned soup for dinner. Had no money for that. So I met quite a few private attorneys while I was with my job at the solicitor's office. And I reached out to those folks and I said, listen, you know, I've started my own law firm. If there's something that you have referrals that, you know, these folks don't have enough money to pay you, then, you know, you know, just really, I got out with word of mouth and I did not advertise. I'm not someone who likes to advertise. I don't like to pay for advertising, I should say. A lot of folks do that, but me personally, I'm not someone who spends money on advertising on a regular basis.
And as far as brand awareness, I know some of the, you know, despite being, you know, like you said, a solo law firm and not having a big advertising budget, your website ranks well. I know you create a lot of videos to promote yourself for, say, brand awareness. What are those things? So you say, obviously, referral marketing has been big for you. Was that the very first thing that you would say people need to do? Is, you know, it's, I know there's that famous book about never eat alone. So the big thing is, you know, referral marketing. You would say that's one of the first things they need to do is start hitting up every lawyer in their location.
Sure. And also, you know, judges as well. I wanted the news to get out to everyone. And, you know, it's not, I don't really think that is the same as solicitation. You know, just getting your name out there and lawyers, you know, they will help you out if you have a decent relationship with them and they believe that you're a competent lawyer. So, you know, I think that was really helpful.
Let's say I'm a young lawyer and I'm starting out my own firm. There's obviously a lot of monthly recurring expenses that come with that. Can you kind of walk us through a little bit what those are, how you dealt with them, and what advice you would give on dealing with things such as, you know, paying for research or paying for, you know, your student loans even and staff? Can you guys walk us through those a little bit?
Sure. So, you know, my monthly recurring expenses are things like, you know, postage. Are you going to go physically to the post office every day, which I was physically doing for a while. And then I realized, hey, I can get stamps.com for, you know, $15.99 a month. I think it's going up a little bit now. And I've noticed, but, you know, you can print out your own postage at your office. student loans, I would, you know, definitely I would put that out there as one of your main priorities. And I would go without before I'd miss a payment.
Right.
Unfortunately, I did not have student loans. But, you know, legal research is another one that, you know, lawyers need to have a legal research way to research cases. There's obviously the paid versions like Westlaw and Lexis, or a free version of a fast case that's offered through the bar. And I used fast case for quite some time until I was able to afford Westlaw. And, you know, I chose Westlaw just because that's what I, you know, used in law school. But, you know, I didn't start a law firm and get a Westlaw account. I was using Fastcase until probably just a couple of years ago, even. So, you know, another thing is case management software. I did without any case management software for a very long time, and until it became completely necessary. And now I don't know how I'd live without it. But I certainly researched prices before I picked one. I tried to get the best deal that I could. And, you know, you can talk to other lawyers in your area before you commit to something. And then, you know, think about things like what's the difference in a monthly versus an annual subscription? How much are you going to be saving in that? See if you can negotiate that.
Susan, can I stop you? How important is case management software? Because I've had it in every firm that I've been at, but I'm wondering if you're a solo practice, is it important to have something to kind of keep you steady, or is that something that, you know, you can deal without the actual paying for the software? I'm just curious.
I added case management software when I added staff. I had no staff for quite a while. And when I started having staff, I realized this person is a very good staff person, but she can't read my mind. So, you know, I believe that what I use is my case. For our software, it's very reasonable per month. And I think that I don't know how I could live without it now. But I built a very successful practice for several years with no case management software. It was just, you know, files, paper files.
Well, and I mean, ultimately, I know one of the things we're kind of going over a review is you've provided us with this outline that I think would be great for people in this position who are thinking about making that decision. We'll put it in the show notes because fortunately Susan's provided us with this outline that kind of lists all the major issues and topics. So you can go to the show notes and see this outline she's put together. It helps you kind of really see this from the, you know, the 1,000-foot view of all the things you need to consider and already have kind of itemized and making sure your budget fits these things. And I agree, as far as case management software, I use Clio, but and it's reasonably priced. And it's, all of them, it's all about negotiating with the vendors. Find a couple that work for you. I mean, there's plenty that are great and will do the job. But ultimately, if you don't have the money, you don't have the money. But again, remember, you can negotiate. These are businesses, and they will work with solo and small firms. I think listening to, say, the Maximum Lawyer podcast is, you know, one of the things I got the idea of about this podcast. It's a bunch of solo and small firms, and they have a Facebook page put to it, and it's nothing but the lawyers helping each other through these type of issues. We also have that section of the South Carolina Bar. There's a solo small firm section, and they have tremendous amount of resources on this very thing. And so check out the show notes to see this outline. I think it's going to help you follow along as well as all the different topics we're covering.
I agree. It's a wonderful outline. And one thing, Susan, that I'd love for you to tell us about is the outline kind of goes through costs, what you can anticipate. What are some of the hidden costs that you might have discovered when you went to be a solo practitioner that maybe we're not all thinking about, or we might take for granted at a bigger firm because it's not something that we look at every day?
So, you know, I've tried to narrow them down, but one thing is one of the number one things is income taxes. And, you know, that is something that I learned very early on. It took a lot of discipline to do this, but I have what's called a tax account. And every fee that I get, a third of it, it doesn't matter what happens, a third of that fee goes into that tax account. And that way, when it's time for income taxes, I'm not scrambling. I can sleep at night, not worrying about income taxes being due. You know, my tax account is something that it just sits there. And so when I quote fees for people, I figure in, okay, well, I'm going to be getting 2/3 of this fee. So what is the amount that I need to charge so that it's covering everything? The second thing is malpractice insurance. I would never do without malpractice insurance. It was just unbelievable at the time how much it cost what I thought at the time. Now I believe it's not as bad, but you know, new attorneys seem to get a little bit more of a break. I don't know on that. You know, you can shop that as well. And then, you know, there's some, if you end up hiring staff, then you end up with, you know, an accountant for doing your payroll. Possibly if you don't know how to do it yourself. I didn't know how to do it myself. So I have a payroll accountant. Now I do, but I, you know, before I had staff, I didn't, but I think that's something that is necessary eventually, because, you know, you don't want to be doing that and spending your time. You want to spend your time practicing law and not being an accountant.
For me, the first time I realized how much money I spent per month on postage.
Yes.
Did you get any SBA loans?
You know, fortunately, it's not part of my business model because I'm not someone who thrives on debt. I absolutely am motivated by not having debt in my personal life and in my business. And I can't stand having to owe people money. And, you know, if that means I have to drive, you know, a Honda instead of a Jaguar, I'm driving the Honda. And I am so happy in that Honda because I do not have car payments. You know, I've always been taught, you know, don't buy something if you can't afford it. And right. Rings true with a law firm. And one of the biggest things that I can tell new lawyers, or even, you know, maybe old lawyers who are transitioning, is when you're negotiating your rent, that is something that you can really save some money with. And I don't mean get low rent. What I mean by that is, what can you negotiate into your rent? Are you going to be able to get yourself a full-time receptionist as part of this office sharing? Let's say you're in a space with another law firm and they already have a receptionist, and it's not going to be, you know, anything different for that receptionist to answer a few calls for your firm. I did that. I still do that. And it's very helpful. You know, you may not need, starting off, you may not need to rent an office for an entire month. Maybe you can rent a space for, when I first started out, I was using someone's conference room. And that morphed into, hey, can I be a tenant here? And then, you know, I just stayed there, got my foot in the door and stayed there. And, you know, you don't need a fancy office. You know, you just need the basics. But you got to think about some other things like parking. You know, are you going to be able to get a free landline with your rent? It's not really free because you pay for it, but you know what I mean. You know, a fax line, a fax machine, a copy machine, a really giant one. I mean, these things can really add up. Office furniture, you can go out and buy used office furniture. You want to look at some other things too, like, you know, the utilities. Is that included in your rent?
Right.
And it's nitpicky, but you have to be nitpicky when you're running a law firm, a lien law firm.
Another one that a little tip that I would throw in there would be, instead of paying for additional phone line, you can get a Google Voice number for free. Do that app on your cell phone, and then you got your law firm number and you're running that off your personal cell phone, but you got a different free number used through Google that you're basically piggybacking off your service provider. So that's an easy way to have, you know, a cheaper, obviously cheaper option of having a separate dedicated phone for the law firm.
Yes, that is an excellent way to save money as well. You know, another really huge way that I have been able to save money is my assistant. I have an assistant that is part-time assistant. She comes in when we're busy, and when we're not as busy, she stays at home, or, you know, she doesn't come to work. I don't know where she goes, but she doesn't. The point is, I'm paying her when I need her and not paying her when I don't need her, versus I have to figure out how I'm going to make payroll each week. So, you know, fortunately I found someone. I mean, it's like finding a needle in a haystack, finding someone who works sometimes and not other times, but, you know, she is a perfect fit for the firm, in that, you know, she'll, if she doesn't have to work, then that's more time with her kids. And if she does, then, you know, that's helping her family pay the bills.
I'm curious, with obviously we're all going through this pandemic now, has this whole working from home and being a, you know, everyone kind of getting more well-versed in technology, have you learned anything during this COVID-19 that maybe you didn't before? Any, you know, new technology tips that maybe you were exposed to recently?
Well, I think that it's a step in the right direction, believe it or not. I've really tried to look at this pandemic as something that's very positive, and I think that we're all learning that we may not, you know, part of my job is litigating, and I may not have to go to every single hearing that's scheduled in person. And it's, you know, it really is helping judicial, it could help judicial economy if I could spend 15 minutes on a hearing versus, you know, driving to the court, waiting for my time to go in front of the judge or whatnot. And, you know, I try to look at it as a very positive thing. And now people realize, you know, we really can do things a lot more efficient by doing things electronically. I mean, I don't think that will holds true for jury trials where you're looking at the credibility of the witnesses. You know, the jurors are determining that kind of thing and looking at their body language and facial expressions. But I do think that the pandemic has been a good thing because we've learned that hopefully some things can be just handled electronically.
What are the best resources that you found in trying to operate your law firm, and, you know, how'd you find them? Where did you find them? Obviously part of being a solo is, you know, you got to have your website, which I said, yeah, I know yours ranks really well. And, you know, you got search engine optimization, SEO. There's all these things that a person who's going to open up their own law firm has to learn. It's not just practicing law. Unfortunately, that's the only a small portion of it is running a business. And, you know, the older colleagues of ours hate to for us to refer to it as a business, but at the end of the day, it is a small business when you run, when you have a law firm. And if you don't have, and I know Amber, you used to, you know, Jake Moore's thing is, if you don't have any clients, you can't be a great lawyer. You can be you can be the best lawyer in the world, but if you don't have any clients, you're not able to help anybody. It's pointless.
Right.
So, you know, at the end of the day, knowing how to, you know, the business side of practicing law is just as important as practicing law if you're going to run a law firm.
Yep.
Or you're just not going to survive. And so where's the best resources that you found, and how'd you find them? Where'd you find them?
So the best resource I found is free. It's free advice from your colleagues, you know, or your friends, whatever you want to call them. You know, I'm still friends with the folks that I practiced with when we were prosecutors. Now, some of them are defense attorneys. And, you know, that's a great resource. Lawyers love to hear themselves talk. And they like...
That's why we started a podcast. That's why we
have a podcast. And they like to be in a position where they can... hopefully they're in a position where they feel like they can help people. But, you know, so I get free advice from colleagues. And then the South Carolina Bar Ethics, like the hotline that they have, the lawyer that you could call when you have ethics questions. I mean, an ethics lawyer is very expensive. I've hired at least one by the hour, you know, just to look over my social media and things like that. But if I have a question that is, you know, an ethical issue, I won't hesitate to call that South Carolina Bar Ethics hotline and ask them, you know, whatever burning question I have. And I've used that resource since I've started my practice. And it really is a great resource, free resource.
Susan, at the end of every episode, we try and get a war story from our guests. It doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, related to the lien law firm. It could be something your career. Usually something funny, poignant, something that you would tell at a bar, you know, once we're allowed to go back to bars. So, Susan Williams, what would be your best war story that you can tell publicly?
Well, you know, criminal defense and prosecution, criminal cases are always, to me, very just so fascinating. Mm-hmm. And when I was at the solicitor's office, I mean, I have so many great war stories, but this is one of my favorites. It was a probation violation hearing, and the defendant and his attorney were at the microphone, standing in front of the judge, asking for the judge's mercy not to revoke his probation. And the judge sentenced that person. She did revoke his probation. And when she did, I don't know what happened, but he fell to the floor of the courthouse. And when he did, it was like a really awkward silence throughout the entire courtroom. Mm-hmm. And everybody was sort of looking at the judge, and she said, "Call someone." And the probation agent stood up and said, "John Smith," or whoever was next on the list. "No, don't call the next name on the roster. Call 911.
Got to keep that assembly line.
John's exactly. Ready to go. He's ready to go.
Step over the body and get up to the microphone. He'll be fine.
Don't mind him. He's just taking a nap before he goes in prison. That's great. Susan, thank you so much for joining us, and especially under the circumstances via Zoom. You can find Susan's website at www.swilliams-law.net. Again, like Dane said, we're going to have a really handy outline for you in the show notes. You know, she's a expert on lean law firm, and as we have young lawyers who may be considering going into their own practice with everything that's going on, I think it's valuable information. So, Susan, thank you so much for joining us.
Yes, thank you
so
Susan.
Much for having me.
Thank you.
Also, enjoyed it. Yeah, thank you so much. Also, remember, the bar has the solo small firm section that's got an incredible amount of resources. I'll remember to throw that link in the show notes as well. Look up for those podcasts like Maximum Lawyer. There's other ones out there that help solo small firms and the Facebook groups that are together. Look, this is a community thing, right? It takes a village out here, and there's plenty of people to help.
Amen.
Thanks, Susan. We appreciate it.